The next 4 weeks, we are going to explore what many commentators or scholars consider a difficult and unsettling book in the Bible. And this morning, Ecclesiastes is one of three books. And there are three books, primarily Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the book of Job, that make up what is known as wisdom literature in the Bible. And these three books, you may have some familiarity with them. Proverbs in particular is one of those things I try to encourage people. When you land on a month, like October would have been great, land on a month that has 31 days, there's 31 chapters in Proverbs. So if you're looking for something to work into a Bible reading or a devotional, Proverbs is a great thing to do a chapter of Proverbs each day during a month that has 31 days. So Proverbs is basically, it's accumulated wisdom, right? It's not just the wisdom of one person, it's the wisdom of many people, but it is accumulated wisdom that observes that if you'll follow this wisdom, most likely. And here's the thing that people need to understand about Proverbs. Proverbs is not guarantees. Proverbs is saying, if you will follow this accumulated wisdom, most likely you will experience a good life, right? A blessed life. And so it's a great thing to kind of familiarize yourself with and to go through. The second book, Ecclesiastes, the one we're going to be taking a few weeks and looking at, is actually written in response to Proverbs, okay? And it's in response to Proverbs because the writer observes that living by that wisdom that is in Proverbs, while most likely it will lead to a good life and blessed life, it doesn't always yield in positive results. Okay, so that's where we're going to be staying for the next couple of weeks. And then the third book is Job, if you're familiar with the story of Job's life. And Job invites us to consider how we can trust God even when life's unfair, how we can trust God in the midst of suffering. So those are the three books. But we're going to, this next few weeks, we're going to be just jumping in and visiting Ecclesiastes. This disturbing and troubling and difficult and unsettling book. Anything that's like that, I guess I get drawn to. Anyway, here's the thing. Ecclesiastes grapples with reality. And I don't know about you or what your experience thus far in life has been, but reality is complex. Right? Things aren't as simple as we say sometimes. Right? Or there's a lot of things that we say. There's a lot of wisdom that can be offered that is much easier to say than it is to live out, right? And when we even do good things, the right things, 100% of the time, things don't always fall, you know, or turn out in the manner that we had hoped for. And so we grapple with that. I think if we're honest about it, we grapple with that in life. And that's what this book addresses. In the weeks to come, we're going to explore the three main themes that are contained in Ecclesiastes. And they're this: time, right? We have to deal with time, the march of time. Guess what? You don't get to pause it, stop it, slow it down. Some of us, the more we're around, the more we're familiar. In fact, we think sometimes it feels like it's speeding up, right? So the march of time, we're going to deal with that theme. We're also going to deal with death. The inescapable, right? The inescapable, right? Unless the Lord comes while you and I are still breathing, we're each going to experience that. And in life, we all, experience the loss through death of loved ones and friends, co-workers, neighbors. So it's this thing we have to grapple with. And then the third theme we're going to take a look at is the random nature of life. Right? Just the random nature of how things turn out. Right? I mean, haven't you ever looked around and just kind of, maybe you didn't say it out loud, but you were thinking, Man, I don't understand why these people who are living this way and wicked just seem to be blessed or seem to prosper or seem to just do well. And why are these people that seem to do all the right things and good things in a righteous manner just like going through all kinds of struggle? And I don't understand it. Right? But then there's also people that are wicked and then they pay for it immediately, and there are people that are righteous and they seem to be blessed. And so we try to sort through how come the formula doesn't work always, all the time. And so that's the random nature of life. So these are the three things we're going to be looking at over the next couple of weeks. Got to tell you, being completely transparent, I had kind of scheduled, I do the sermon planning a year out in advance. Right, so I have right now already have 2020 the entire year planned out. Now that's outlines. That's not meat on the bones. That's just got the bones, and the meat will come. But I had originally planned to do wisdom literature, right? I always give myself a little bit of breathing room, so I just said wisdom literature. Didn't hone in on what it was going to be exactly. But being completely transparent, during a period of reflection during my summer vacation, right? You guys that have been here, you know what I'm referring to. During my summer vacation, recovering from quadruple bypass surgery, it causes you to be a little bit reflective. It's amazing how, when you are faced with your own mortality, how it will grab your attention. And, during that time, I was drawn to this book, because it was a book I've read it before. I've kind of gone through it before, but I thought, I need to just kind of pause and really just kind of walk through this thing. And what is he saying, Because it's a book, in the past, I'll be honest with you, I've kind of read it and gone, what? I kind of just get that feeling. I thought, I'm going to dive into this a little bit. The three main themes that I mentioned just a moment ago, time, death, and this random nature of life or realities, I believe that we're all struggling with. And I think we all struggle with them because we try to understand them. Or maybe even more difficult. I don't know. I don't know which is more difficult. Is it more difficult to try to understand the random stuff that happens in life? Or is it more difficult to accept it? Or maybe it's both. Maybe we're going through both, All of a sudden, somebody gets that diagnosis. Somebody has that experience. Somebody has that tragic accident. Somebody has, there's all these things. And as we try to sort through and we grapple and we struggle with that, it's trying to understand it, wrap our head around it, maybe our hearts around it, and to even accept things that didn't turn out exactly the way we'd hoped. So, I hope that there'll be something in here that you can benefit from over the next couple weeks. In the praise team, when we were talking in the kitchen before we came out, they usually ask me, or I'll say, how the sermon's going to end. Are we kind of ending on a high note? Are we ending on a low note? What musically will work better to help us out of here? And of course, when you say Ecclesiastes, everybody's like, it's going to be depressing. It's going to be, everything is meaningless. It doesn't matter, right? So I hope that you'll be able to see a few different things as we walk through this over the next couple of weeks. There's two or three things or components to this book I want you to understand before we dive deep into the themes in the coming weeks. So if you'll take a look, open up your programs, it'll be on the screen. Now, I've done something here that I usually don't ever do because I don't like to give stuff away, and I don't want you to think you know where I'm going because then you might, tune me out, right? So I kind of, I try to make you go, what? And sometimes that keeps you with me. You'll see if you open up your programs, you'll see I've not only listed the beginning of the book, I've listed the end of the book. Right, so you're going to get the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie all up front today because I think it's important so that we better understand how to walk through this book, because I really do. I want to encourage you over the next couple of weeks to be reading through this book, and see what it has to say to you, how the Lord would use it to speak in your life. So here we are, the first one, at the opening, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 1 and 2 says this. These are the words of the teacher, King David's son, who ruled in Jerusalem. Verse 2, this is a really, really popular verse. Everything is meaningless, says the teacher. Completely meaningless. Well, that's hopeful. Those are words that are just like, you know, building you up. So it's important for us to kind of take a look at just everything that's contained right here in these two verses, because we get a lot of hints at what we're going to be dealing with throughout the course of this book. First of all, I want you to recognize, whether you have immediately or not, that in the book of Ecclesiastes, there are actually two voices. There are two voices that are being heard in this book, and it's very important that you understand that, or we can be misled sometimes, and they're not that the word is trying to deceive us, but we can misunderstand things if we don't understand what's going on. There's two voices in the book of Ecclesiastes. The one is the author of the book. The writer of the book is one voice. And he's very subtle about identifying himself, but he does. And then there's the voice of the writer, the teacher, sometimes known as the critic, okay? And the teacher's words are the words that we're going to hear through the majority of the book. But the teacher is not the author. The words that comprise 90% of this book are not the words of the person who wrote it. They're passing on the words of someone else. And they think that those words are valuable enough that we need to hear them. Although, they don't necessarily always agree with them. And it's important for you to know that. Because, see, when we pull things out of context and we just rip it off of a page, we maybe think it's telling us something that's good news or great wisdom, when it may be the dumbest thing in the world, because you didn't understand that the author just wanted to share something with you that the teacher said that he thinks is complete rubbish. But he's not going to tell you that right now. He's going to tell you later. And then you go, oh yeah, this is my life verse. Really? Wow. Anyway, just throwing it out there for you to think about. Ecclesiastes, because so he says right here in the beginning, these are the words of the teacher. The author's right off the bat, real subtly, he's saying, these are my words. These are the words of the teacher, right? King David's son, who ruled in Jerusalem. And so he's going to bring together this big quote that the teacher says over and over and over and over again. Everything is meaningless, right? I mean, that makes you want to go out and do stuff, right? Everything is meaningless. Go ahead and buy that. It's meaningless. Right? Go get an education. It's meaningless. Right? Accumulate wealth. It's meaningless. Right? So, I mean, after a while, though, I mean, if you kind of ride that train and it gets you to the point that it's like, okay, should I just like lay here and do nothing? Right? And so it can be a very confusing book. So this word, this meaningless, is actually a Hebrew word, hevel. Is the word that he's saying. So in Hebrew, he's actually saying, everything is hevel. Hevel, hevel, everything is hevel. In fact, the teacher uses this term hevel 38 times in this book. So it's an important term that we need to understand what it actually means. And I will tell you that most of the English translations do a horrible job. And I picked one. One that I preach from all the time, the New Living Translation, because I think it's great at communicating in a way that we can grasp and in a language we clearly understand. But I will tell you, it does a horrible job at capturing this term, this word, hevel. Now, when you look through all of the different, and there's so many different translations, but when you look through the different translations in English, they come up with meaningless. New Living Translation says meaningless. I think the New International Version, NIV, says meaningless. I think the Revised Standard says meaningless. The Complete Jewish Bible says pointless. And then you've got like the English Standard Version, the King James Version, A couple others, they all use the word vanities, right? It's all vanities, vanities, because that's even more clear, right? Because we don't use that word at all in that context. I mean, that's like, so anyway, so, you know, we have this meaningless, pointless, vanities. All of those, I will tell you, do not do justice to this term and can really send us on a path of misunderstanding the entire point of this book. In fact, the two closest translations in English that capture this book is one, the HCSB, if anybody's familiar with the Holman Christian Standard Bible. Right? Most of you are like, oh, yeah. Right? I've got all of these because these are all different ones I use for studying. But they use the word futility. Futility. Now we're getting close. Now we're getting close. And you know what translation of the Bible actually renders this the best? For some people, this will surprise them. For some haters, this will disturb them. The Message Bible is the one that gets it right. Right? And he uses the word smoke. Because that's what it means. See, the Hebrew term hevel means vapor, smoke, fog. Think in those thoughts, those terms. It's not without meaning. He doesn't mean that at all. So when you hear that 38 times, it can lead you down, completely down the wrong course when you're reading this book. So you need to scratch out anywhere it has meaningless or anything like that, and you need to put above it vapor, smoke, or something like that, right? I mean, seriously, this will derail you. Okay? So here's the idea. The idea is, I want you to think in terms of this. You know, think of vapor, smoke, and all. I mean, you can see it, right? Right? You see a big thing of smoke, it comes up, and you can see it. Right? And it actually can, it can cover something, right? And like, you know, because, I mean, military uses it, right? They'll pop smoke to cover themselves so they can exfil, they can get in and out of a place. Right? So it has the ability to mask stuff. But have you ever tried to grab a hold of smoke? What do you got? See, this is the message the teacher is trying to communicate. He's not saying everything is without meaning. Very much the opposite. In fact, he's going to state repeatedly, he's going to list all kinds of things that have great meaning. But here's the point. The point is in life, we get caught up in all these things, right? Great wealth. Here today, gone tomorrow. People can accumulate all kinds of wealth and then die before they get to spend it. And they leave it to an heir who's an airhead. And it's gone in 6 months. You see what I'm saying? I mean, we live in this pretext or, you know, a misunderstanding where we think that these things are actually, we can hold on to them. We can keep them, right? Health, wealth, materialism, all this stuff. Having stuff. Oh, man, we like to accumulate stuff. We want stuff, don't we? I mean, all these things, you know, happiness, right? All these things that are meaningful. They're not bad things. But the writer wants us to understand that you can't hold on to them. They're fleeting. Things are for a moment. Some of these things that are great things don't endure. And we need to come to terms with that. We need to accept that and grapple with that. So, we move on down to Ecclesiastes 1, 12 through 14. We're just flying over today. Today's just a flyover, and then we're going to dive into the themes in the next 3 weeks. It says this, I, the teacher, was king of Israel, and I lived in Jerusalem. I devoted myself to search for understanding and to explore by wisdom everything being done under heaven. I soon discovered that God has dealt a tragic existence to the human race. right? This guy is just, you think I have the gift of encouragement? This guy, right, is like the stellar encourager. I soon discovered that God has dealt a tragic existence to the human race. I observed everything going on under the sun, everything going on in life, everything going on under on those planets, and really, it is all hevel, right? It's not meaningless. It's not without meaning, but it is fleeting, right? You can't hold on to it. Remember Psalms I shared a couple weeks ago from Psalms 39, where, Lord, our life is just a breath, that we come and then we go, right? He says, it's all meaningless, like chasing the wind. I love that phrase, chasing the wind. Some of us spend our lives, some of you guys expel so much energy chasing the wind, and yet the things that are substantial, you won't even give a nod to. You're not living with an eternal perspective. You're living with what can I accumulate right now? Because you think it's going to last. Wow. That's pretty sad. Because you are deceived. Right? And it... interesting that they would use the term hevel, and that later in later times that would become a phrase that would be associated with the stage, right? It would be associated with the stage and drama and the theater. You ever heard that the term smoke and mirrors? What does that even mean? You know the meaning behind that is that the smoke and mirrors are used to create an effect to deceive the audience. And see, what he's saying is everything in life can be, doesn't have to be, but can be very deceiving. We can become deceived into thinking that the things we're pursuing are what really matters, but they are simply smoke that you can't hold on to. Okay, everybody excited? So anyway, like I said, this is just laying a foundation. We're going to talk about these scenes over the next few weeks. So here's the thing. The author, the writer of this book is anonymous. We don't know for sure who it is. Okay? Just so you know that. The author of the book, we don't know for sure. Now, the teacher, there's speculation. There's two camps that really have settled in scholarship as to who the teacher is. In other words, the author is sharing the words of the teacher with us. He thinks they're valuable enough that need to be heard and considered, but the author is not the teacher. The author is anonymous. The teacher has been identified as one of two persons. There are some that believe that the teacher is Solomon, right? Be actually King David's biological son, literal son, who was the king of Israel, lived in Jerusalem, right? But I will tell you, the bulk of scholarship now believes that it was a much later descendant of David who would have been figuratively David's son, who served as a king and lived in Jerusalem, but took on a Solomon-like persona in the writing. Okay? That's a lot for you to wrap your head around there for a second. But don't worry, it's all hevel. Right? That's what you get. Now, it does have meaning, but it's hard for us to grasp, so I'm just being right up front with you. The author is anonymous, but the teacher is either Solomon or someone later who was much like Solomon and is adopting kind of his persona. Okay, and I know these are facts that some of you are going, I don't care, right? But if you want to understand this and not misunderstand it, these are important pieces. Again, this hevel, it's not that it's without meaning, but it is that it is fleeting. It is fading. It's going to go away, right? People come, people go. We live our lives and we think it's forever, And it's just for a moment. It's just a breath. And then we're gone. And the things that we do, are they going to stand? Are they going to matter? Or are they just going to fade away with us? If we're living with just a temporal perspective, then it's hevel. Everything is hevel. So then we get to the end of the book, because I want you to see the end of the story, right? So in chapter 12, verses 8 through 14, here we go again. Everything is meaningless, says the teacher. Completely meaningless. Everything is hevel, says the teacher, completely hevel. Keep this in mind. Now the author is trying to give us a hint here. The author says, keep this in mind. The teacher was considered wise, and he taught the people everything he knew. He listened carefully to many proverbs, studying and classifying them. The teacher sought to find just the right words to express truths clearly. The words of the wise are like cattle prods. They're painful, but they're helpful. Their collected sayings are like a nail-studded stick with which a shepherd drives the sheep. Okay, so hear it again. The author is telling us that the teacher is thought to be wise. The teacher was sharing everything he knew. The teacher had listened carefully to the Proverbs, right? And he had studied them. And then the author even tells us that these Proverbs are like a nail-studded stick with which a shepherd drives sheep, right? They're painful, but they're helpful. But then he says this. He addresses the audience directly, and he says, but my child, let me give you some further advice. Now we're going to get the author's opinion, not the teacher's. And this is how the book closes. Be careful, for writing books is endless, and much study wears you out. In other words, when truth has already been stated, people will write books about it again and again and again and again, and there's going to be books written about all kinds of stuff over and over and over again. It's endless. And you can study all of it, but the fact of the matter is the truth's already been given. Right? I mean, unfortunately, we can say this in our own culture today and even in the Christian culture. The truth has been given. We have the Bible. The truth has been given. But boy, there's a whole lot of people and a whole lot of publishers that make a whole lot of money publishing book after book after book after book after book after year after year after year after book. How many books do we need on one subject to figure it out? I don't know. But it's kind of what he's saying. So, writing books is endless and much study wears you out. That's the whole story. And so he says to him, this is the author, he says to his child, the audience, he says, here now is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands, for this is everyone's duty. God will judge us for everything we do, including every secret thing, whether good or bad. So it's important that you understand the two voices. And so that you don't read everything that the teacher's saying throughout the book and think that's the end all of be alls and what he must be saying is right. Everything, you know, is this or everything is that. Because as we explore some of these, you're going to be going, wait a minute. Right? There's two voices going on here. The author or the writer. He's sharing the words of the teacher. The teacher is trying to let us know that things are not without meaning, but things are fleeting and hard for us to grasp and hold on to. Because he's wanting us to gain a different perspective. And then the author chimes in at the end and gives us his conclusion after sharing the words of the teacher. Now, The author will concede. I'm going to tell you this, and I wanted you to understand this morning before we go into the next few weeks, that the author is going to concede that life is hevel. But he looks at it a little differently. This hevel is beautiful, and it's mysterious, right? Life is like the smoke or vapor because it's unclear. Sometimes it's confusing. Sometimes it's disorienting. And it is ultimately uncontrollable. Like fog or vapor or smoke. However, in the author's conclusion, we can fear God. We can keep His commands. We can enjoy the moment. And he's going to encourage us, the teacher will even do that, to enjoy the moment and trust God's judgment. Because one day, God will clear the hevel. He's going to clear the fog. He's going to clear the smoke. And we're going to see everything as it should be seen. So, I did fail to issue like a spoiler alert, other than I told you we were going to get the beginning and the end, but I felt it was best that we have an understanding of these things before we press into the book. So you might leave here today with more of a question mark than a period or an exclamation point, and that's okay, because that's what this book is about. It's about grappling and struggling with the questions of the things that we observe in life, and knowing that reality is not as simple is sometimes we would like it to be. So we're going to be exploring these themes: time, death, and the random nature of life.